that she did try to yell out, and now she is responding to the questions that will return right now.
Okay, so I have three areas that I'd like to address.
Okay.
In the second paragraph, where it says this, the assault occurred in a suburban Maryland area home.
Yes.
At a gathering that included me and four others. I can't guarantee that there weren't a few other people there, but they are not in in my purview of my memory.
Would it be fair to say there were at least four others?
Yes.
Okay. What's the second correction?
Oh, okay. The next sentence begins with Kavanaugh physically pushed me into the bedroom. I would say I can't promise that Mark Judge didn't assist with that. I don't know. It was pushed from behind, so I don't want to put that solely on him.
Okay.
Okay.
Ms. Mitchell, I don't know whether this is fair for me to interrupt, but I want to keep people within 5 minutes. Is that a major problem for you in the middle of a question? Because I don't, I've got to treat everybody the same.
I understand that.
Can I go to Senator Feinstein or you?
Yes, sir. I'm sorry. I didn't see the light. Okay. It was red. Please
Senator
do.
Senator Feinstein.
I didn't get to. So
we're going to come back to that.
Oh, okay.
When she comes back.
I
so
see.
Just make
I see. Thing. Okay.
Fast.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, when she comes after Franklin is done, she'll come back and she'll ask you about the other
okay. For the benefit of Dr. Ford, I think she'll continue that after the 5 minutes here.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to begin by putting some letters in the record.
Without objection, so ordered.
Thank you.
If you want to tell me.
140 letters from friends and neighbors of the witness, and 1,000 female physicians across the country. Those are what the letters are.
Don't look at this.
I want to thank you very much for your testimony. I know how very, very hard it is. Why have you held it to yourself all these years? As you look back, can you indicate what the reasons are?
Well, I haven't held it in all these years. I did disclose it in the confines of therapy, where I felt like it was an appropriate place to cope with the sequelae of the event.
Well, can you tell us what impact the events had on you?
Well, I think that the sequelae of sexual assault varies by person. So for me personally, anxiety, phobia, and PTSD-like symptoms are the types of things that I've been coping with. So more specifically, claustrophobia, panic, and that type of thing.
Is that the reason for the second door, front door?
Correct.
Is claustrophobia?
Correct. Our house does not look aesthetically pleasing from the curb.
I see. And do you have that second front door?
Yes.
Yes.
It now is a place to host Google interns because we live near Google, so we get to and other students can live.
Can you tell us, is there any other way this has affected your life?
The primary impact was in the initial 4 years after the event. I struggled academically. I struggled very much in Chapel Hill in college. When I was 17 and went off to college, I had a very hard time, more so than others, forming new friendships and especially friendships with boys. And I had academic problems.
What were the when we spoke and it became very clear how deeply you felt about this and the need that you wanted to remain confidential? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. So I was watching carefully throughout the summer Well, my original intent, I just want to remind, was to communicate with everyone when there was still a list of candidates who all seemed to be, just from my perspective, from what I could read, equally qualified. And I was in a hurry to try to get the information forward, but didn't quite know how to do that. However, once he was selected and it seemed like he was popular and that it was a sure vote, I was calculating daily the risk benefit for me of coming forward and wondering whether I would just be jumping in front of a train that was headed to where it was headed anyway, and that I would just be personally annihilated.
How did you decide to come forward?
Ultimately, because reporters were sitting outside of my home and trying to talk to my dog through the window to calm the dog down, and a reporter appeared in my graduate classroom, and I mistook her for a student, and she came up to ask me a question, and I thought that she was a student, and it turned out that she was a reporter. So at that point, I felt like enough was enough. People were calling my colleagues at Stanford and leaving messages on their voicemails and on their email saying that they knew my name. Clearly, people knew my address because they were out in front of my house. And it just, the mounting pressure, it seemed like it was time to just say what I needed to say.
I'm sorry. I want to ask you one question about the attack itself. You are very clear about the attack, being pushed into the room. You say you don't know quite by whom, but that it was Brett Kavanaugh that covered your mouth to prevent you from screaming, and then you escaped. How are you so sure that it was he?
The same way that I'm sure that I'm talking to you right now, it's just basic memory functions, and also just the level of norepinephrine and epinephrine in the brain that sort of, as you know, encodes, that neurotransmitter encodes memories into the hippocampus, and so the trauma-related experience then is kind of locked there, whereas other details kind of drift.
So what you are telling us is this could not be a case of mistaken identity.
Absolutely not.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Ms. Mitchell for Senator Hatch.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When we were stopped, you were going to tell us a third correction that you wanted to make on that statement, the letter to Senator Feinstein.
It wasn't a correction, but I just wanted to comment on it since we were looking at this letter, that I did see Mark Judge once at the Potomac Village Safeway after the time of the attack, and it would be helpful with anyone's resources to figure out when he worked there, if people are wanting more details from me about when the attack occurred. If we could find out when he worked there, then I could provide a more detailed timeline as to when the attack occurred.
Okay. And that is not a correction in your statement?
It's just, no.
Okay. You also wrote out a handwritten statement for the polygrapher when you took your polygraph test. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And I see corrections on that where you crossed out. So I will go on to the Washington Post article that was originally published on September 16th of this year.
And should I just not look at this for accuracy, or we're just going to leave that be?
We may come back to it if you need to refer to it.
Okay.
On the Washington Post article, did you submit to an interview by a reporter with the Washington Post for that article to be written?
Correct.
Okay. And then finally was the statement that you provided this morning. I assume that to the best of your recollection that was accurate.
That this whole article is accurate?
No. The statement that you made this morning.
Yes.
Okay. I want to talk to you about the day that this happened leading up to the gathering.
Okay.
In your statement this morning, have you told us everything that you remember about the day leading up to that?
Yes.
Let me ask just a few questions to make sure that you've thought of everything, okay? You indicated that you were at the country club swimming that day?
That's my best estimate of how this could have happened.
Okay. And when you say best estimate, is that based on the fact that you said you went there pretty much every day?
Mm-hmm.
Is that a yes?
Yes.
Okay. Do you recall prior to getting there, so I'm only talking about up to the gathering,
okay,
had you had anything to drink?
Not at all.
Okay. Were you on any sort of medication?
None.
Okay. Do you recall knowing before you went who was going to be at that gathering?
I recall that expecting that Mark Judge and Leland would be at that gathering.
Okay. Do you recall an expectation that Brett Kavanaugh would be there?
I don't recall whether or not I expected that.
Okay. Now, let's talk about the gathering up from the time you arrived till right when you went up the stairs, just that period of time, okay? Mm-hmm. What was the atmosphere like at the gathering?
Mr. Kavanaugh and Mr. Judge were extremely inebriated. They had clearly been drinking prior, and the other people at the party were not. The living
Can
room
I
was...
Can I ask you just to follow up on that? When you said it was clear that they had been drinking prior, do you mean prior to the time you had gotten there or prior to the time they had arrived?
Prior to the time that they arrived. I don't recall who arrived first, though, whether it was me or them.
Okay. Please continue.
Okay. So I recall that I can sketch a floor plan. I recall that it was a sparsely furnished, fairly modest living room, and it was not really a party, like the news has made it sound. It was not. It was just a gathering that I assumed was going to lead to a party later on that those boys would attend, because they tended to have parties later at night than I was allowed to stay out. So it was kind of a pre-gathering.
Was it loud?
No, not in the living room.
Besides the music that you've described that was playing in the bedroom, was there any other music or television or anything like that that was adding?
No.
Okay. So there wasn't a stereo playing downstairs?
No.
Okay.
Senator Leahy. Dr. Ford, thank you for being here.
Patrick Leahy of Vermont.
Mr. Chairman, you know, the way to make this inquiry truly credible is to do what we've always done when new information about a nominee comes to light. To use your words this morning, you want to reach the truth. The easy way to do that, ask the FBI to investigate. It's what we've always done. Let them investigate, report back to us. The same applies to the serious allegations made by Deborah Ramirez and Julie Swetnick. Let's have a nonpartisan, professional investigation, and then take the time to have these witnesses testify. Chairman, you and I were both here 27 years ago. At that time, the Senate failed Anita Hill. I said I believed her, but I'm concerned that we're doing a lot less for these three women today. That's my personal view. Now, Dr. Ford, no matter what happens with this hearing today, no matter what happens with this nomination, I know, and I hear from so many in my own state of Vermont, there are millions of victims and survivors out there who've been inspired by your courage. I am. Bravery is contagious. Indeed, that's the driving force behind the Me Too movement. And you sharing your story is going to have a lasting, positive impact on so many survivors in our country. We owe you a debt of gratitude for that, Doctor. Now, some senators have suggested you were simply mixed up about who assaulted you. An ally of Judge Kavanaugh in the White House even promoted a wild theory about a Kavanaugh lookalike. You immediately rejected that theory. as did the innocent man who had been called that lookalike. In fact, he sent a letter to this committee forcefully rejecting its absurd theory, and I ask consent to enter that in the record.
Without objection.
Now, how did you know Brett Kavanaugh and Mark Judge? And is it possible that you would mix them up with somebody else?
No, it is not. And the person that was blamed for the incident is actually the person who introduced me to them originally. So he was a member of Columbia Country Club, and I don't want to talk about him because I think it's unfair, but he is the person that introduced me to them.
But you would not mix up somebody else with Brett Kavanaugh, is that correct?
Correct.
Or Mark Judge?
Correct.
Well, then let's go back to the incident. What is the strongest memory you have? Strongest memory of the incident, something that you cannot forget. Take whatever time you need.
Indelible in the hippocampus is the laughter, the uproarious laughter between the two, and they're having fun at my expense.
You've never forgotten that laughter. You've never forgotten them laughing at you.
They were laughing with each other.
And you were the object of the laughter?
I was, underneath one of them while the two laughed. Two friends having a really good time with one another.
Let me enter into the record a statement by the National Task Force to End Domestic Violence.
Without objection, so ordered.
And a letter from 24 members of the House of Representatives urging the committee to use the NTF's trauma-informed approach in questioning Dr. Ford. And a letter from another 116 members of the House asking to delay until all this has been heard.
Without objection, so ordered.
And Dr. Ford has at times been criticized for what she doesn't remember from 36 years ago. But we have numerous experts, including a study by the U.S. Army Military Police School Behavior Sciences Education, that lapses of memory are wholly consistent. The severe trauma and stress of assault. I'd ask consent that be entered.
Without objection, so ordered.
And Dr. Ford, I'll just conclude with this. You do remember what happened, do you not?
Very much so.
Thank you. Thank you.
Now, Ms. Mitchell for Senator Graham, and then it's my understanding that's where you'd like to take a break.
Does that work for you? Does that work for you as well?
We're here to accommodate you, not to accommodate us.
I'm used to being collegial. So.
Okay, go ahead. Ms. Mitchell for Senator Graham.
Again, Rachel Mitchell
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Special prosecutor. You told Senator Feinstein in your letter that you and four others were present. You've corrected that today to say it was at least four others. When you were interviewed by the Washington Post, you said that there were four boys present at the party. And then in your polygraph statement, you say there were four boys and two girls. When you say two girls, was that you and another, or was that two other girls?
That was me and one other girl.
And that other girl's name?
Leland.
Leland Kaiser now?
Correct.
Okay. So then would it be fair to say at least PJ, Brett Kavanaugh, Mark Judge, Leland Ingram at the time, and yourself were present, and possibly others.
And one other boy. So there were four boys. I just don't know the name of the other boy.
Have you been contacted by anybody saying, hey, I was at the party too?
No, I haven't talked with anyone from that party.
Okay. Now, you've been detailed about what happened once you got up the stairs, and so I don't need to go through that again. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I'm sorry. I just realized that I said something that was inaccurate. I said I hadn't spoken with anyone from the party since that. I've spoken with Leland.
Okay. Thank you for correcting that. I appreciate that. You've gone into detail about what happened once you went up the stairs, so I don't feel like it's necessary to go over those things again.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Have you told us everything that you do remember about it?
I believe so, but if there are other questions, I can attempt to answer them.
Okay. You said that the music was solely coming from that room. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. And it was turned up once the three of you were inside that room. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. At some point, do you recall it being turned down?
I don't remember if it was turned down once I was leaving the house. I don't remember.
Okay.
Likely, since I could hear them walking down the stairs very clearly from the bathroom.
Okay. And the bathroom door was closed when you heard this. Is that correct?
I could hear them very clearly hitting the walls going down the stairwell.
In fact, in your letter, you said that they went down the stairs and they were talking with other people in the house.
Correct.
Were you able to hear that conversation?
I was not able to hear that conversation, but I was aware that they were downstairs and that I would have to walk past them to get out of the house.
Okay. Now, let me make sure we're on the same page. Were you not able to hear the conversation or not able to understand the conversation?
I couldn't hear the conversation. I was upstairs.
Okay. How do you know there was a conversation?
I'm just assuming since it was a social gathering, people were talking. I don't know.
Okay. In your letter,
I heard them talking as they went down the stairwell. They were laughing.
Okay. In your letter, you wrote, both loudly stumbled down the stairwell, at which point other persons at the house were talking with them. Mm-hmm. Does that ring a bell?
Yes, I had to walk past everyone to leave the house. So, I'm not understanding. I'm sorry.
Okay. Your next sentence, let me try to clarify this. After you said other persons at the house were talking with them, the letter goes on with the very next sentence, I exited the bathroom, ran outside of the house, and went home.
Correct.
Okay. You said that you do not remember how you got home. Is that correct?
I do not remember.
Okay.
Other than I did not drive home.
Okay. I'm going to show you, if somebody could provide to you, a map of the various people's houses at the time, and if you could verify that this is where you were living at the time.
Where I was living at the time?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, do we have a copy of these documents?
We do not have a copy. If you want one, we can get you one.
Yes, before the questions begin, so we can follow the testimony.
Okay. My staff says that we should not provide the copy.
No, we will provide the copy.
Oh.
We will provide the copy.
Well, speak plainly with me, please.
Oh, sure. I'd like to see what she's looking at.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, you have another 30 seconds now because I was rudely interrupted.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, Senator Harris, we do have a blown-up copy of this for the members to view, if that's helpful.
Okay, I'm going to put check marks next to homes that I can confirm are the correct locations, and then an X or a question mark when I don't know where these people live.
I'm only asking you to confirm if that map accurately shows where you were living at the
time. Where I lived at the time. So I can't see the street name, but I'm happy to refer to the address or the neighborhood.
Okay. Could you tell us that?
Yes. It's River Falls.
Okay.
It's near the, what is the place called? The Naval Research Center on Clara Barton Parkway.
Okay, was that a house or an apartment?
It was my parents' home.
Okay.
Yeah, all right, okay.
Durbin.
Mr. Chairman, I ask consent to enter into the record letters of support for Dr. Ford from her classmates at Holton Arms School, 1,200 alumni of the school, 195 of your colleagues, students, and mentors, 1,400 women and men who attended D.C. schools, and 50 members of the Yale Law School faculty who are calling for a full FBI investigation. I ask consent to enter these into the record.
Without objection, so ordered.
Dr. Ford, as difficult as this experience must be, I want you to know that your courage in coming forward has given countless Americans the strength to face their own life-shattering past and to begin to heal their wounds. By example, you have brought many families into an honest and sometimes painful dialogue that should have occurred a long time ago. I'm sorry for what this has done to you and your family. No one should face harassment, death threats, and disparaging comments by cheap shot politicians simply for telling the truth. But you and your family should know that for every scurrilous charge and every pathetic tweet, there have been thousands of Americans, women and men, who believe you, support you, and thank you for your courage. Watching your experience, it's no wonder that many sexual assault survivors hide their past and spend their lives suffering in pain silence. You had absolutely nothing to gain by bringing these facts to the Senate Judiciary Committee. The fact that you are testifying here today, terrified though you may be, the fact that you have called for an FBI investigation of this incident, the fact that you are prepared to name both Judge Kavanaugh and eyewitness Mark Judge stands in sharp contrast to the obstruction we've seen on the other side. The FBI should have investigated your charges as they did in the Anita Hill hearing, but they did not. Mark Judge should be subpoenaed from his Bethany Beach hideaway and required to testify under oath, but he has not. Judge Kavanaugh, if he truly believes there's no evidence, no witnesses that can prove your case, should be joining us in demanding a thorough FBI investigation, but he has not. Today, you come before this committee and before this nation alone. I know you're joined by counsel and family. The prosecutor on the Republican side will continue to ask questions to test your memory and veracity. After spending decades trying to forget that awful night, it's no wonder your recollection is less than perfect. A polished liar can create a seamless story, but a trauma survivor cannot be expected to remember every painful detail. That's what Senator Leahy has mentioned earlier. One question is critical. In Judge Kavanaugh's opening testimony, which we will hear after you leave, this is what he says. I never had any sexual or physical encounter of any kind with Dr. Ford. I am not questioning that Dr. Ford may have been sexually assaulted by some person in some place at some time. Last night, the Republican staff of this committee released to the media a timeline that shows that they've interviewed two people who claim they were the ones who actually assaulted you. I'm asking you to address this new defense of mistaken identity directly. Dr. Ford, with what degree of certainty do you believe Brett Kavanaugh assaulted you?
100%.
In the letter which you sent to Senator Feinstein, you wrote, I have not knowingly seen Kavanaugh since the assault. I did see Mark Judge once at the Potomac Village Safeway, where he was extremely uncomfortable in seeing me. Would you please describe that encounter at the Safeway with Mark Judge and what led you to believe he was uncomfortable?
Yes, I was going to the Potomac Village Safeway. This is the one on the corner of Falls and River Road. And I was with my mother, and I was a teenager, so I wanted her to go in one door and me go in the other. So I chose the wrong door because the door I chose was the one where Mark Judge was looked like he was working there and arranging the shopping carts. And I said hello to him. And his face was white and very uncomfortable saying hello back. And we had previously been friendly at the times that we saw each other over the previous 2 years, albeit not very many times. We had always been friendly with one another. I wouldn't characterize him as not friendly. He was just nervous and not really wanting to speak with me. He looked a little bit ill.
How long did this occur after the incident?
I would estimate 6 to 8 weeks.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Before we take a break, I can't let what Senator Durbin said, by the way, he's my friend, we work on a lot of legislation together, but you talked about the obstruction from the other side. I cannot let it go by, what you've heard me say so many times,
that between July 30th and September 13th, there were 45 days this committee could have been investigating this situation, and her privacy would have been protected. So something happened here in between on your side that the whole country, well, not the whole country should have known about it. No, not know about it. We should have investigated it. We'll take a break now for 15 minutes.
And you're listening to the Senate Judiciary Committee confirmation hearing for Brett Kavanaugh to the Supreme Court. This morning, we are hearing from Dr. Christine Blasey Ford testifying about her allegations of sexual assault by Brett Kavanaugh when they were in high school. I'm Mitch Jezerich, and I'm here with Antonia Yuhas. And Antonia, what we are going to be doing is we are going to get some quick news headlines, and then when we come back, we'll have some guests for you. But first, we're going to get the latest news with Eileen Alfandary.
Christine Blasey Ford has described publicly for the first time the sexual assault she says Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh committed at a high school gathering decades ago. She told the Senate Judiciary Committee she was terrified to testify but felt it was her civic duty. California Senator Dianne Feinstein asked Blasey whether she could have been mistaken about who attacked her.
You are very clear about the attack, being pushed into the room. You say you don't know quite by whom, but that it was Brett Kavanaugh that covered your mouth to prevent you from screaming, and then you escaped. How are you so sure that it was he?
The same way that I'm sure that I'm talking to you right now. It's just basic memory functions, and also just the level of norepinephrine and epinephrine in the brain that sort of, as you know, encodes, that neurotransmitter encodes memories into the hippocampus, and so the trauma-related experience then is kind of locked there, whereas other details kind of drift.
So what you are telling us is this could not be a case of mistaken identity.
Absolutely not.
In response to a question from Illinois Senator Dick Durbin, Blasey said she is 100% certain it was Kavanaugh who assaulted her. Blasey is a professor of psychology. President Trump was supposed to hold a decisive meeting with Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein today, but may delay it. Trump said at a news conference yesterday he would certainly prefer not to fire Rosenstein. Trump said he's focused on today's Senate Judiciary Committee meeting and might have a little bit of a delay in the planned meeting with Rosenstein. Trump noted that Rosenstein denied making remarks first attributed to him in a New York Times report, including that he had discussed possibly secretly recording the president and using the Constitution's 25th Amendment to remove Trump from office. That report led to speculation that Trump would fire Rosenstein or force him to resign. Such a move would throw into question the future course of Special Counsel Robert Mueller's Russia probe, which Rosenstein oversees. Uber has agreed to a $148 million nationwide settlement for a 2016 data breach and cover-up that affected 57 million drivers and customers. Uber paid hackers $100,000 to keep silent about the breach and destroy the data. It was only reported the following year. California Attorney General Javier Becerra called Uber's decision to cover up the breach a blatant violation of the public trust. The nationwide settlement calls for a $148 million penalty payment by Uber benefiting all 50 states and the District of Columbia. The settlement also requires Uber to implement and maintain robust data security practices and to report any future data security incidents. The House of Representatives overwhelmingly approved $1.7 billion to help residents of the Carolinas and elsewhere recover from Hurricane Florence and other natural disasters. The aid was added to short-term legislation to keep the Federal Aviation Administration's programs in effect. Lawmakers described the disaster payment as a down payment. They say billions more will be needed in the months ahead to help communities devastated by Hurricane Florence. I'm Eileen Alfandary for Pacifica Radio.
Ready. And you're listening to Pacifica Radio's live coverage of the Senate Judiciary Committee confirmation hearing for Brett Kavanaugh. We are in a 15-minute break as we are hearing from Christine Blasey Ford herself. I'm Mitch Jezerich with Antonia Yuhas.
And it's been a pretty emotional morning, I think, for people in attendance and certainly for Dr. Blasey Ford. Not only has she presented her own testimony, but hearing recaps of the accusations by Deborah Ramirez and Julie Setnik that were presented by Senator Feinstein. In her 8-page testimony, Dr. Blasey Ford provided new details of the alleged assault. She asserted that she was absolutely 100% certain that it was Brett Kavanaugh and Mike Judge involved, Brett Kavanaugh who committed the assault and Mike Judge who was present in the room. And she spoke for the first time about the laughter that shared between the two men during the attack and afterwards, and how powerfully she remembered that and heard it at the time. And she said, quote, "I tried to convince myself that because Brett did not rape me, I should be able to move on and just pretend that it had never happened." And she was definitely questioned by the prosecutor, Rachel Mitchell, brought on by the Republicans in a way that felt very much like we were at a trial. And Prosecutor Mitchell was trying to catch Dr. Blasey Ford in misstatements. We're joined right now by a very special guest. Dr. Zoe Peterson is Associate Professor and Director of the Sexual Assault Research Initiative at the Kinsey Institute at Indiana University Bloomington. Her research focuses on the experiences of unwanted, coerced, and non-consensual sex from the perspectives of both the victims and the perpetrators. Say, thanks so much for being with us, Dr. Peterson.
Thank you for having me.
Can you talk about this statement that Dr. Blasey Ford made that I just read about trying to convince herself that because it wasn't a rape, she should just move on and pretend that it didn't happen, and just reminding listeners that she was 15 when this assault happened?
Yeah, so I think often for victims, you know, any form of sexual assault often feels confusing. Often it feels like, you know, there's this sort of stereotype of sexual assault, you know, maybe of this stranger that jumps out of the bushes with a knife, and that's not, in fact, what most sexual assaults are like. And so a lot of people who experience rape and sexual assault feel like, well, it wasn't, you know, overtly violent. I don't have physical injuries, and so somehow this shouldn't count, and I should just get over it. And I think that's even more true in a case where it was attempted rape, and as she describes it, it was a physical assault and thus potentially quite traumatic, and yet she got away. And so I think often victims feel like, well, you know, if I was a resilient person, I should just bounce back from this, and it shouldn't be a big deal.
And, you know, it seemed to me, you know, she had said that one of the reasons why she had initially chosen not to come forward was the concerns of reliving the experience. How difficult do you think it is to be having to recount this experience for her? How hard it is for her to be recounting it?
I can't imagine. So, you know, as a psychologist, I see people in safe, private therapy sessions where telling about an experience is, you know, incredibly difficult. So to do what she is doing on this kind of public stage, I can't imagine how terrifying that must be.
And how do you feel that the questions have been thus far in terms of respecting how difficult it must be, including from the prosecutor, Mitchell?
Yeah, I mean, so I'm not a law expert, so I don't know, you know, I don't know what the goals are. But I can just say, I think, you know, there's often this expectation that victims, you know, should remember every moment, and that if they don't remember every moment, the moments they claim to remember, they're not remembering. And I think, you know, Dr. Blasey Ford referenced what we know in psychology about how memory works. Is that, you know, the moment of the trauma is just kind of, you know, emblazoned in people's memory, and often the surrounding experiences fall away. So, you know, details of what happened immediately before and happened immediately after fall away because what is stuck there is that traumatic moment. And you know, victims often describe things like remembering in great detail the pattern of the wallpaper in the room where they were sexually assaulted, but they may not remember anything that happened, you know, after the sexual assault. And so I think this sort of expectation of the questioner is that, you know, that she should remember other details, or that maybe she's not remembering the details that she does remember correctly, does kind of ignore some of that science.
Dr. Peterson, associate professor in the Counseling Psychology Program and director of the Sexual Assault Research Initiative at the Kinsey Institute at Indiana University, Bloomington. Dr. Peterson, stay with us. We're going to take a quick 30-second music break to allow all of our radio stations to identify themselves if they so wish to. We'll come back and we'll hear more from you. Stay with us.
Okay.
This is KBOO Portland. It's 8:39.
Listening to KPFA's live coverage of
Pacifica Radio.
Excuse me, Pacifica Radio. Pacifica Radio's live coverage of the Senate Judiciary Committee hearings, in which Dr. Blasey Ford is presenting accusations against Supreme Court nominee Judge Kavanaugh. And while they are at break right now, as the questions of Dr. Blasey Ford will continue after that break, we have our guest with us, Dr. Zoe Peterson, associate professor and director of the Sexual Assault Research Initiative at the Kinsey Institute at Indiana University, Bloomington. Thank you again for being with us, Dr. Peterson.
Sure, glad to do it.
Can you talk to us more about what the experience of having to relive the memories of sexual assault and attempted rape mean in the long term for those who go through it? Of course, it's one thing to do it in therapy, another thing to do it in public, and potential long-term impacts of that.
Yes. So, I mean, one of the sort of hallmark features of post-traumatic stress disorder, or PTSD, is this attempt, which Dr. Blasey Ford described in her testimony, of trying not to think about it and trying to avoid thoughts of it and not talk about it. And that's a sort of central feature of the disorder. And in many ways, although in some ways that helps to kind of maintain the other symptoms, it also makes perfect sense and is really adaptive, because when people are kind of forced to relive that experience and talk about that experience, especially if they're not doing it in a place that feels safe and contained, the other symptoms of PTSD, like that kind of panic that Dr. Blasey Ford describes, nightmares, difficulty sleeping, all of those things can become kind of heightened during the time in which they're asked to talk about and relive the experience.
Yeah, and she, in watching her during the testimony, you know, she clearly got very emotional at many points, and including during the questioning, you could see her chest, you know, heave very intensely. It looked like she might, you know, sort of lose control. She spoke about experiencing issues of claustrophobia and, you know, other concerns. You know, I guess help us understand the emotional toll that this, you know, could be taking, or is common with victims in this circumstance.
Yes. So I think, you know, I think you talk about the kind of heaving chest, and, you know, I think a lot of kind of anxiety symptoms are kind of physical sensations. So feeling short of breath, feeling flushed, you know, racing heart, those kinds of things. Also, as I said, you know, kind of problems sleeping, difficulty concentrating, all of that kind of heightened arousal can make all of those things very difficult. And then these unwanted, intrusive kinds of thoughts about the experience that often people who've had these experiences are constantly trying to control those. But in a moment of real anxiety, all those kind of intrusive things can come back up.
And we also have with us Sonali Kolhatkar, who is one of the Pacifica hosts from KPFK in Los Angeles. Thanks for being with us, Sonali.
It's my pleasure. Thanks so much, Antonia.
And Sonali, I wanted to get your take on this, first part of the hearing that we've seen so far.
Well, for me, one thing that struck me was the way in which Senator Chuck Grassley, he's the only Republican we've heard from so far, of course, because the other senators are conceding their time to Ms. Mitchell, the questioner. But everything that has come out of Chuck Grassley's mouth has been defensive and trying to lay the groundwork that had they only known, had they only had the opportunity, and, making it very clear that they've bent over backwards to accommodate Ms. Ford, when, of course, they haven't really done that. But to me, the fact that they're attempting to relay that is actually a victory for women's rights, because we live in a moment now where it's unacceptable to run roughshod over women. So men feel like they have to at least give the impression that they're hearing women. Now, whether they actually do hear what she has to say is a whole nother question. I'm very curious to see how the Arizona Maricopa County questioner is building whatever it is that she's building, because she's very systematically using the 5 minutes of the senators at a time to attempt to figure out the veracity of what it is that Dr. Ford experienced and what she remembers, and she's clearly building up to something. So we'll see what transpires.
Yeah, and it definitely seems, feels to me much more like a trial than your typical Senate hearing, with Rachel Mitchell providing that prosecutorial questioning of Dr. Blasey Ford. And I'm wondering, Dr. Peterson, as we're watching this unfold, and it's not only Dr. Blasey Ford who's come forward, it's also Deborah Ramirez, it's also Julie Swetnick. Do you think this is good for survivors of sexual assault who are out there, millions of other women and men, boys and girls?
Yeah, that's a good question. I was thinking about that as we were listening to it. On the one hand, I think that, they are very brave women, and that's, sort of a great model. And I think when women see other women coming forward, they know that they're not alone and they're maybe more likely to come forward. But on the other hand, I think, women and survivors, men and women survivors everywhere, are also seeing that these women are being doubted and having their, character attacked in some cases, being threatened. So everyone is also witnessing the consequences of these women coming forward, which hasn't been entirely good. So I don't know. I don't know what impact it has. I think the fact that they're coming forward is incredibly brave, and I think it's really good to show other survivors that they're not alone. But the reactions to these women is probably not so encouraging to other survivors.
Yeah, in fact, Dr. Blasey Ford said during questioning that she initially didn't come forward because she said, quote, "I was afraid that I would be annihilated." You also look in your research at the impact on perpetrators of committing acts of unwanted sex and sexual assault, and an alleged perpetrator, someone who's responding to accusations against him, Judge Kavanaugh, has said in his prepared testimony, very defiant, very much describing himself as the victim. Can you talk about when you're working with those who are perpetrators and not saying that Judge Kavanaugh is, what is the common response and how to help them work through what their usual response is?
I haven't done so much research on, what are men's reactions to being accused or perpetrators' reactions to being accused. But I can say that I do know from my research and from other people's research that most men and most of the research on perpetrators is done on men, that most men who perpetrate sexual aggression or sexual assault, who describe doing behaviors that would legally qualify, don't think of themselves as rapists and wouldn't want to think of themselves as a rapist. You know, they think of the rapist as a bad guy, and they're not that kind of guy. And yet they, you know, in questionnaires, for example, will admit to doing behaviors that would legally qualify as rape or sexual assault.
Dr. Peterson, we apologize to you. The hearing has once again continued, but Zoe Peterson, associate professor in the Counseling Psychology Program and director of the Sexual Assault Research Initiative at the Institute at Indiana University, Bloomington. Dr. Peterson, we thank you so much. Sonali Kohatkar, we'll be joined with you again later on as well. We now return to the Senate Judiciary Committee hearing with Dr. Christine Blasey Ford. And again, we are now hearing from the prosecutor who has been brought in, Rachel Mitchell.
The address that's indicated on here as belonging to your family is what all the property tax records showed as being your address.
Okay.
Just to put it in perspective, I'd like to show you a further out, a zoomed out picture so that we can put it in perspective. So we can show the greater Washington area. Of course, you can see the Beltway on that, the Beltway area.
Okay.
And then number three, if we could look at that. We drew a 1 mile radius around the country club, and then we calculated from the farthest
point. Mr. Chairman, again, we don't have these documents. No, we're not. That's why she showed three different documents, because they depict three different things. So we'd like to see all three documents, please, so we can follow along.
Proceed, please.
Okay. Looking at the third thing here, we calculated the distance from the closest point to your house from a mile radius of the country club, and then the farthest point. You can see it's 6.2 and, of course, 8.2 miles. Mm-hmm. And you've described this as being near the country club, wherever this house was. Is that right?
I would describe it as somewhere between my house and the country club in that vicinity that's shown in your picture.
Okay.
And the country club is about a 20-minute drive from my parents' home.
A 20-minute drive. And, mm-hmm. of course, I've marked as the crow flies.
Yes.
Would it be fair to say that somebody drove you somewhere, either to the party or home from the party?
Correct.
Okay. Has anyone come forward to say to you, hey, remember, I was the one that drove you home?
No.
Okay. In your July 6th text to the Washington Post that you looked at earlier, you said that this happened in the mid-80s. Mm-hmm. In your letter to Senator Feinstein, you said it occurred in the early 80s. Mm-hmm. In your polygraph statement, you said it was high school summer in 80s, and you actually had written in, and this is one of the corrections I referred to, early, and then you crossed that out. Later in your interview with the Washington Post, you were more specific. You believed it occurred in the summer of 1982, and you said the end of your sophomore year.
Yes.
You said the same thing, I believe, in your prepared statement. How were you able to narrow down the time frame?
I can't give the exact date, and I would like to be more helpful about the date, and if I knew when Mark Judge worked at the Potomac Safeway, then I would be able to be more helpful in that way. So I'm just using memories of when I got my driver's license. I was 15 at the time, and I did not drive home from that party or to that party, and once I did have my driver's license, I liked to drive myself. So
I assume the legal driving age was 16?
Yes.
Okay. Now, you've talked about attending therapy. In your text to the Washington Post dated 7/6, mm-hmm. so that's the very first statement we have from you, you put in there, quote, have therapy records talking about it. Mm-hmm. I want to make sure I understand that. Did you already have your therapy records at that time?
I had looked at them online to see if they existed, yes.
Okay, so this was something that was available to you via a computer, like a patient portal?
Actually, no, it was in the office of a provider.
Okay.
She helped me go through the record to locate whether I had had record of this conversation that I had remembered.
Did you show a full or partial set of those marriage therapy records to the Washington Post?
I don't remember. I remember summarizing for her what they said. So I'm not quite sure if I actually gave her the record.
Okay. So it's possible that the reporter did not see these notes.
I don't know if she's, I can't recall whether she saw them directly or if I just told her what they said.
Okay. Have you shown them to anyone else besides your counsel?
Just the counsel.
Okay. Would it be fair to say that Brett Kavanaugh's name is not listed in those notes?
His name is not listed in those notes.
Would it also be fair to say that the therapist's notes that we've been talking about say that there were four boys in the room?
It describes the sexual assault, and it says erroneously by four boys. So the therapist got the content of it wrong.
And you corrected that to the Washington Post reporter, correct?
Correct.
Senator Whitehouse.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you, Dr. Blasey Ford. A lot of people are proud of you today. From a prosecutor's eye,
Sheldon Whitehouse, Rhode Island.
One of the hardest things that we have to do is to speak to somebody who's come forward with an allegation of sexual assault and let them know that we can't provide the evidence to go forward to trial. It's a hard day for the prosecutor to do that. And so both because making a sincere and thorough investigative effort is such an important consolation to the victim in that circumstance, and because it's what you're obliged to do professionally, sincere and thorough investigation is critical to these claims in a prosecutor's world. It may be the most basic thing that we owe a victim or a witness coming forward is to make sure that we give them a full, thorough, and sincere investigation. You have met all of the standards of what I might call preliminary credibility with your initial statement. You have vivid, specific, and detailed recollections, something prosecutors look for. Your recollections are consistent with known facts. You made prior consistent statements, something else prosecutors and lawyers look for. You were willing to and did take a lie detector test. And you were willing to testify here. Here you are, subject to professional cross-examination by a prosecutor. So you've met any condition any prosecutor could expect to go forward, and yet there has been no sincere or thorough investigation of your claims. You specifically asked for an FBI investigation, did you not?
Yes.
And are you aware that when the FBI begins investigating, they might find corroborative evidence and they might find exculpatory evidence?
I don't know what exculpatory evidence is.
Not helpful to your recollection and version of events, helpful to the accused.
Understood, yes.
So it could go either way.
Yes.
And you were still not just willing, but insistent that the FBI should investigate your recollection and your claim.
Yes, I feel like I could be more helpful in that. If that was the case, in providing some of the details that maybe people are wanting to know about.
And as we know, they didn't. And I submit that never, never in the history of background investigations has an investigation not been pursued when new, credible, derogatory information was brought forward about the nominee or the candidate. I don't think this has ever happened in the history of FBI background investigations. Maybe somebody can prove me wrong, but it's wildly unusual and out of character. And in my view, it is a grave disservice to you, and I want to take this moment to apologize to you for that and to report to anybody who might be listening that when somebody's willing to come forward, even under those circumstances, even having been not given the modicum of courtesy and support of a proper investigation, you've shown yourself particularly proud in doing that. And the responsibility for the decision to have this be, I think, the only background investigation in history to be stopped as derogatory information came forward belongs with 13 men: the president, Director Wray of the FBI, and the 11 members of the majority of this committee. As to the committee's investigation, the fact that Mr. Kavanaugh's alleged accomplice has not been subpoenaed, has not been examined and cross-examined under oath, has not been interviewed by the FBI, tells you all you need to know about how credible this performance is. The very bare minimum that a person who comes forward is owed is sincere and thorough investigation, and you've been denied that, and I will make a personal pledge to you here that however long it takes, in whatever forum I can do it, whenever it's possible, I will do whatever is in my power to make sure that your claims get a full and proper investigation and not just this. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Since this issue's come up so many times, I'd like to comment.
Chuck Grassley.
The New Yorker published an anonymous account of allegations September the 14th. 2 days later, Dr. Ford identified herself as the victim in a Post article detailing her allegations. I immediately directed my staff to investigate. September the 17th, Dr. Ford's counsel went on several television shows requesting that her client have an opportunity to tell her story. The same day, I scheduled a hearing for Monday, September the 24th, given Dr. Ford a week to prepare her testimony and come to Washington, D.C. On September the 17th, committee investigative staff reached out to Dr. Ford and Judge Kavanaugh to schedule follow-up interviews with Republican and Democrat investigators. Judge Kavanaugh accepted the opportunity to speak to the investigators under criminal penalty. Dr. Ford declined. In his interview on September the 17th, Judge Kavanaugh denied the allegations and requested a hearing as soon as possible. Democratic staff refused to participate in that interview.